I need to fire my agent. He is indeed a fucking idiot. Or he's doing so much coke that his secretary Stella is doing the actual fucking work again. Or maybe the couriers delivered the wrong envelopes to the wrong addresses. Or the old gods intervened and are just now feeling mischievous. Or, you know, I'm just jaded and cynical. Earning $16 million for the last movie that had me giggle like a schoolgirl, show my penis. It was a body double, by the way, and a disappointing one at that, let me tell you. And then the promotional junket at the Ritz delivered me the wonderfully random delight of a pretty showbiz journalist from Portugal just fluffing her lines and simply stating, "I'm sorry, I just wanna fuck you." How the hell am I supposed to be gifted to play this in a dark, ironic way? An interstellar cargo carrier, set in 2067 on the Mars-Earth trading route. A mystery virus carried by octopi in the kitchen deck. I know! Managing to turn us all into genderless fuckwits, striving and succumbing to murderous thoughts until only one remains, destined to be the carrier. The recipient of the Queen's seed, as an alien race attempts to pursue colonization of the galactic outer rim? Seriously? Do I have to find my daughter so I can forbid her to marry one? I stare down at the script in my hands, not quite believing what I'm reading, and reach for my cup of coffee. It's not Alien, or Blade Runner, Outland, or Mercury 6, or Highlander, not even a bad episode of 60s Star Trek. It pretends to struggle to strive to be. Fuck this shit. You sent me this thinking I'd love it? We need, seriously, to have a conversation, Mr. Agent. Or perhaps Stella too. Maybe I just need to take a deep breath. And then take a look around. Nibieska's. It was a little gem, a family-run coffee shop. They'd been here since the 50s, the family coming here after the war. Set in a forgotten quiet corner of Covent Garden, only the ardent lucky few knew where it was. And they kept returning because it wasn't the corporate bland monster that infects every single high street. This was a small, distinct advert for singular colour, where the coffee could be good one day, and absolutely awful the next. They baked their own sweet things, and sometimes they were burnt, sometimes they were just right. You never quite knew what you were going to get, and that's why it was such a delight. Not so much a business, it felt more like an invitation whenever you sat at a table to simply hear and feel a family expressing itself. No holds barred. Today was a Saturday, and it was busy. They always called me Mr. Englishman, which tickled me copiously. They knew who I was. I'd even signed a DVD for a surprise birthday gift for one of the cousins. But they just let me get on with whatever I needed to do. And whenever I'd drop in late, Papa Nibieska would join me at my table, and we'd put the world to rights, grunting as men do when we speak and decide where the world has gone wrong. And because it was the weekend, the older kids were in residence, bustling around, taking care of things, in their dark blue uniforms. They would always swing by and say hello, never intrusive, just friendly. There was Yarek, dreaming of being a pilot, but right now just keeping an eye out for the ladies. Little Anya, all smoulder and smiles. She'll be going to university in a couple of months. And there in the back, there was Tola, keeping tight control of the chaos. She never smiled, for whatever reason, just grimly keeping going, steering the ship. She was a dark mystery, and all the more intriguing for it, but I will make her giggle one day, even if it's the last thing I ever do. Back to the script. I've been around long enough, so I remember when times could be tough. My first breakthrough set me up, and the calls and the nominations started to come as people began to notice what I could do. But I always remember the early years, living off student food. You know, noodles and cheap red wine and toast. With Nail and I, it wasn't quite. But there's a reason we love that film in the business. Because we can all find little resonances in there somewhere. It's like an industry-wide in-joke. Ah, for fuck's sake. McDermott's leg has just fallen off for no reason any sane person can imagine. I mean, am I missing something? If they were aiming for a bleak and complex, they nailed it for sure. Not quite Citizen Kane oblique or Usual Suspects complex. If they were aiming for sloppy, tired and misspelt, then they fucking nailed that too. The Zions officer looks like he's in trouble now. Yes, you heard me. The Zions officer. S-I-E-N-S-E. And you know what? His name is Zed. If someone says, Zed's dead, baby, Zed's dead, in the next few pages, I am personally going to stalk Los Angeles till I find the fucker who wrote this, and I will stick this script where the sun don't shine. Which is a neat trick in LA, if you get my drift. But my incredulous eyebrows at the words below me were interrupted as Tola weaved across the floor and approached. I'm sorry, Mr. Englishman. I know you're busy, but this is the last seat in the house. Can I sit someone here with you? This is why I love this place. Without even flinching, I replied and smiled. Of course you may. Tola stepped aside and proffered the seat to her companion. Please, take a breath. And I'll get someone over to see to you. And that was when we met. As you sighed and took a weight off, all denim and heels sliding gently into that little chair opposite me, just grateful to be able to sit down, a morning of chaos both tiring and demanding having left its mark, as all you needed was a moment of pause and a damn fine coffee. Maybe a pastry. Maybe just a moment to collect your thoughts. Thank you. I just needed a minute, a seat and a pause, you said, as you finally took a deep breath, arching your head back as you stretched and stretched in your seat. Relaxing, unwinding, and I'm already curious as to what's caused you such stress. This is the kind of thing that only happens at Niebieska's. It's a strange, friendly atmosphere, maybe also magical, but people say their most honest things here. A sigh from you, giving at least some semblance of release, as Tola bustled up again and placed a cup softly for you on the tabletop, and you open your eyes and smile to her, thanking her as she left again. She placed a friendly, gentle palm on your shoulder as she stepped away, as you muttered, "Coffee," and started to regain your composure. Red-headed, you began to find yourself in this quiet little corner of the coffee shop as you sipped a little. Faux redhead, perhaps, but a redhead you clearly were in spirit, confident and peaceful within your thoughts. A little lioness with a style that just oozed smiles and energy. And then those eyes. Dear God. Green. Grey. Rust and mottled honey flecks of texture, as I think I can see little dark motes of grey in there too. Maybe I'm wrong there. Those stains of rust shining back as you blinked, the sun through the window catching them sharply. And when you did, you smiled warmly again, as if to say hello. "I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you," you said. "That's quite all right, little red-headed stranger," I gently quipped, staring mischievously into those beautiful eyes, seeing them flutter. "And what's my new companion's name, I wonder?" I linger a little with my glance, seeing you react, demurely, but with a sparkle, holding my gaze confidently. "Oh, I'm sorry. Melody. Pleased to meet you." "Well, Melody, it's a pleasure to have you too at my table today." And I smiled warmly, reaching a hand across the table to you, gently enveloping your soft pale hand noticing your dark mint green nail varnish, with the sunlight catching the playful glitter within them, and you made me smile again. Such a nice shade of green, I softly added, looking at your hand, holding and lingering another time, as I feel you soften, and I stroked your palm slightly with my finger, hoping you can see that I noticed you do so. It matches your eyes so well. Looking up again and catching you full on this time. And this time I see you melt just a little more as my soft, deep voice betrays the tenderness in my touch. And then the slightest of blushes and the slightest of pressure as I can feel you almost wanting to squeeze back. And we slowly withdraw our hands as you suddenly grin. And we both relax back into our seats, our eyes still dancing, gauging and assessing each other as we accept a little frisson of electricity connecting us there. Little Anya, busily checking up on her tables, breezily coming over and asking if we were okay, and we both glanced over to her and matched our, yes, I'm very fine, in perfect unison. Maybe she simply picked up on that harmony, or the two pairs of eyes that were shining when looking towards her, or perhaps the relaxed body language. She grinned a little. Her eyes were smiling, as she proclaimed, "You two should sing together. That was perfectly said. Mr. Englishman, you've met your muse, and you know you're supposed to be working." You furrowed your brow just a little. "Mr. Englishman?" you asked. "Oh, yes," said Anya. "In here, he's just our Mr. Englishman." And then she turned away and busied back to the kitchen chaos, throwing away a line that got quieter and quieter as she receded further across the bustling coffee shop. "Just throw up a hand and I'll come to you if you need anything." Eyebrows raised already, you threw both hands up with a mock expression of comic confusion looking over to me. "Yes, Melody." "One, they call you Mr. Englishman. So firstly, what's that all about? Two, that pile of paper is 2 inches thick. Is that your work? Are you a writer? Screenwriter, maybe?" And then took a sip of coffee, waiting for an answer. Closing your eyes again, arching and sighing. "Oh, that feels so good. A moment to just... Ah." "Oh. You must be a Leo," I thought idly. Only a Leo would demand such answers in such a way. I wonder where else your lioness roars. And I think I've maybe misjudged you just a little bit. "Take your time, Melody," I smiled. "Thank you, sir. This morning's already been a bit of a bitch. I just need a moment of repose, and that's exactly what I'm getting." "I'm so sorry to hear that. What was going on? Transport? People? Phase of the moon?" "Oh, nothing so dramatic. My mum's just driving me crazy again." She looked down a little and furrowed those exquisitely shaped brows again. Just a little again. And I replied curiously. "And that was my next question, too. What brings you here from... Upper Midwest, I'm guessing?" She looked up sharply, that radiant smile returning again. "Yes. How did you know?" "I've a good ear for accents. Midwest is just so gentle and relaxed, honest and almost naked when it comes to expressing emotion. Especially when they try to do it softly." She blushed a little again, giggling softly, warmly, a little lip bite going on. "Yeah, you're so right. We just can't hide our feelings. It's always getting us into trouble." As you finished, you looked again into me and tilted your head to one side, absent-mindedly stroking the side of your neck as you did so. I beamed. I would let those eyes devour me. They were just full of such secrets, such longing. youth and vigour, a calm serenity, and yet a fire and a power still lurking somewhere underneath. Demure yet hungry, quiet and yet turbulent, soft but steeled, submissive and playful, but oozing such potential explosive passion. They were happy to be so unveiled, happy to be so noticeably naked to anyone who cared to look closer. And I was joyously happy to do so. And I could see you were more than happy to let me. And then you bit your lip so gently again. "Mr. Englishman," you offered quietly. I pretended that the nuance was missed, but I knew your eyes could see otherwise, before launching into explanation. "Oh, I've been coming to this place for a while. It's a quirky little diversion for me. It's got character in buckets. It's not your usual chain place. That's enough to make it what it is. And they decided to christen me Mr. Englishman for some reason. So you're a regular, and they put me on your table." You giggled again. You seem to let loose a little of yourself when you do that. It's such an enticing way of exposing yourself further, as a young woman, and you know that, just able to relax in the badinage of conversation between souls that met randomly. "Well, yes, I guess. When you're a zombie, you don't tend to have a fiver left in your back pocket, do you?" "No, I guess not. Too much enticement elsewhere. Brains in particular. Brains, they do be enticing." A pause, and another glance. "I've no reason to read this ridiculous script any further. This little bundle of curious joy is just so much more interesting. And anyway, the last time I read it, I'd been killed by a fucking octopus. How the fuck does an octopus stalk me into a corner?" And Zed was indeed dead, baby. Zed was indeed dead. "Los Angeles, here I come. Life is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, yet signifying nothing. And if I ever find you, Mr. Writer, I'm going to buy you a drink and then find a way to paint 'You're an idiot' on your back. I'll howl with laughter when I do, don't worry. And Stella, you and I, girl, we need to talk. So, tell me about your mum. What did she do this time?" "Oh, it's nothing. It's just this is her first trip to Europe. Well, first trip to anywhere. And she's a little excited." "Why London?" "Well, she loves Broadway and the theatre. And I won a ticket on the state lottery. So I wanted to treat her for once. It's been just the two of us for so very long." "That's such a sweet thing for you to do, Melody." "Why, thank you, Mr. Englishman. I'm glad you approve." I giggled this time. Oh, my insane staccato trademark that just lets loose when I'm giddy. Like I did when they gave me that pink BMX bike to sit on. Good times, I reflected inwardly. So much has happened since. But I just smiled and dialed it down and glanced down at my watch. "So where is she now?" "Shopping." I pointed her to Bond Street and told her to call me when she's done, which will be probably next Tuesday. That made me snork just a little. "She shops with a vengeance when she puts her mind to it," you added. "Ladies do approach it as a mission calling." "Men see it as a mere inconvenience," I said. She took another sip of coffee, eyes sharp above the rim of that cup. "You still haven't answered question number 2, Mr. Englishman." "I know. I'm just teasing you. Ever so just a little bit." She placed a coffee down gently and breathed deeply. "Yes, you are, aren't you? It's very annoying, I have to say." And then she smiled again, an achingly soft tone to underlie that expression of annoyance. I'm beginning to want my imagination to run wild, because I think she would like that.